I've been waiting all day to look at this script that Casey wrote me that she knows I'm not going to read. I am going to take a couple of liberties. I don't want to take up too much time because we really do need to hear from the smart people, but I am going to take a couple of liberties. I was moved this morning by the strong, powerful women that were all up here on the stage, and I recognize that in the city of Goose Creek, we have a female city administrator, we have a female police chief, we have a female recreation director, we have a female HR director, we have a female planning director, we have a majority council of females in the city of Goose Creek. And for any of you who are familiar at all with my wife, you know the strength of the woman to whom I am related by marriage. And she is quite similar to two sisters that I have. And so for the better part of my 56 years, I have been doing what women tell me to do. And it has worked out just fine. There is a quote I'm sure that many of you are familiar with from Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who has said, "Women belong in all places where decisions are being made. It shouldn't be that women are the exception." My wife has the t-shirt with the quote and wears it quite proudly. So I am proud of the work that we do and that everyone here does. And I'm proud to do what Barbara tells me to do. I'm less proud to read what Casey tells me to read, but I will do what she tells me to do when that comes. So Casey says, "Thank you, Barbara." "I figured you know your own name and title here." My name is Greg Habib. I'm the mayor of the city of Goose Creek, and I'm very pleased to serve as the chair of this year's legislative committee. Each year, the association's legislative committee plays an important role in the development of the annual advocacy initiatives for cities and towns. The committee is made up of a cross-section of mayors, council members, and staff from municipalities of all sizes and all parts of our state. The association develops its advocacy initiatives based on the input gathered from local officials during the association's regional advocacy meetings. Based on your suggestions, the association staff develops recommendations for legislative committees and consideration about actions that can help cities and towns the most. This is where I'm going to take some more liberty, much to Casey's. You'll be okay. I want to reiterate a point of how important it is, the role that we take as members of the association, as board members or whatever, the role that we take in helping our staff and guiding them in the legislative process, in what we want to see, and how important it is that we play a very significant role in creating those legislative priorities. They need to know, and we have the most skilled advocacy team that you could ever imagine, they need to know that the initiatives and the priorities that they carry over to the State House on our behalf are fully supported and understood by every member in here. So I want to encourage you to please pay attention to the issues that come out in the Dome to Your Home on every Friday. Listen to the podcast. Podcast stars here. Listen to the podcast. Pay attention to the issues that affect the quality of lives in cities and towns in South Carolina. It is very important. I will also want to reiterate what Todd said, and the whole reason that we are here today for the Legislative Action Day. I had an experience with a legislative friend of mine who serves in the House here in Columbia, and I was made aware of a bill that he had introduced that did not serve South Carolina's cities and towns in a way that I was very appreciative. So I called him and got his attention. I did not threaten him. We have a very good relationship, and I got his attention, and he very much appreciated it. And I said, "Representative, please, if you have a bill or if you're introduced a bill or if you've heard of a bill that has anything to do with a city or town, please call me." Well, another thing got introduced, and sure enough, I'm on a text message with him and somebody else because he wanted to know. He told her he wasn't doing anything until he talked to me about that bill. I want to encourage you and make sure all of you establish relationships with the legislature, with our state legislature, your legislative delegation, so that you can have those conversations, so that cities and towns in South Carolina can continue to make the impact in Columbia that we need to be making. Cities are the economic, cultural, and social centers of our state, and our impact is very significant if we work towards that. Now I'll go back to her script. Some of the issues move and others don't. Just a reminder that 2024 is an election year that has a lot to do with what legislation moves forward. Also keep in mind that these initiatives are the only thing, are not the only thing that our team is working on this session. In our online legislative tracking system, they are following more than 300 bills that could have an impact on your city or town. Again, to reiterate, your need to pay attention to these bills and how they impact you. That number increases every day with new bill introductions to break down major issues that we are following and working on. I want you to welcome, please, our team of Scott Slatton, our Director of Advocacy and Communication, Casey Fields, our Manager for Municipal Advocacy, Erica Wright, and Joni Nickel, our Public Policy Advocates.
Hoorah!
Hoorah!
Very good. Thank you. Thank you.
And now I go sit down. That's what it says for me to do. Thank you, Casey.
Thank you. You did a really good job. You only strayed from the script just a little bit.
More like half.
Just a little.
Am I on? Are you on?
I'm on. Are you on? Is everybody on?
We're on.
I want to be ready for my shout
okay.
out.
Thank you so much for being here in this room with us. We know it's probably a lot nicer to sit out there and have a muffin or a cup of coffee and talk to your friends or colleagues that you haven't seen in a long time, but we really, really appreciate you being in here and listening and just getting information from us about what's going on at the State House. Mayor Habib is correct. From the Dome to Your Home every Friday, the podcast, Uptown Update, Uptown for bigger kind of background on issues. All those things are ways that we communicate with you. But this right here is very much up to the minute. My colleagues were on the telephone this morning working out everything that anything you can imagine. People are calling them and saying, okay, look, I've heard about this, or I've heard this, or what is your opinion on this? And that was going on right before we stepped on the stage. So this is definitely, you know, some late breaking information. And I'm so glad that you're here to share it. If y'all in the back want to sit down, there's a whole row of chairs in the front, and we will not call you out for anything, Brian Ramey. We will not. We're not going to do anything like that. So as Mayor Habib said, this is the second year of a two-year session. What does that mean? Why do we care? Why does that matter? There is a greater sense of urgency, because if bills do not pass by the end of the session in May or June, whichever they decide that how long they're going to go, they are dead. Those bills have to be reintroduced as a new bill for next January for the 2025-2026 session. There is also something called the crossover deadline. The crossover deadline happens at the beginning of April. That means that any bill that has not passed out of its originating chamber is also dead. So really, we have until April to get bills across to the other chamber. Now, y'all, there are amendments, there's chaos, there's all kinds of things, but that is the time frame that we're looking on. So we are what, mid, early February? Scott would say it's already the summer.
It's mid-March.
It's end of March
already.
He would say it was mid-March. It is also an election year for everybody, for the House and Senate. I'm sure that y'all have seen signs already. You have gotten some mailers already. You've got commercials going. I know a friend of mine in Gaffney just told me she's seeing commercials. You've got all kinds of stuff going on that is just swirling around that also have an impact on legislation in Columbia. There are fights among Democrats. There are fights among Republicans. There are fights among Republicans and Democrats. It is total chaos. Here's some interesting, here is a good date to remember, April 1st. April 1st is the filing deadline. April 1st is like a week before crossover. Filing opens March 16th and closes April 1st. So on April 2nd, we are going to know what House and Senate members have opposition in primaries and in the general. That will affect legislation moving forward. It is already affecting legislation now. Speaking of legislation, these three people that I work with are amazing. You probably already know that.
Yep.
But I can say it. I can say it again. They are absolutely amazing. They are tenacious. They are intelligent. And they represent you with the utmost integrity that there anybody at the State House.
That's all we got, Casey. We can't write checks, so you know, like everybody else.
So we're going to start, and we are between y'all and lunch. So we're going to take, this will last about 45 minutes. It's going to be quick. If you have a question, grab us afterwards. We can certainly go into more detail with anything after this session if you have any questions. Erica, did you want to shout out your boy, your man? Not your man, but your friend, your person.
Yes, I just wanted to give a shout out to the gentleman who sang the national anthem this morning. Yes. That is my little brother, Kylan.
Oh.
I know. I was a wreck. Not biologically. I've known him since he was 5 years old. We attend the same church in North Charleston. And when Ken Ivey asked if I knew anyone that could sing, I said, I do. And I call him Luther 2.0. Y'all heard the Luther. And I'm very proud of him. He now lives in Mount Pleasant. So, Christiane, he's available for booking if you need him. But I'm very glad that he had that opportunity. And thank you all for your kind words as he was exiting. I don't know if he's here, but I'm just a proud big sister right now.
Yeah. Why don't you go ahead and give everybody an update on your stuff,
okay,
if you want to do that. Let's start with
zero millage.
Thanks.
No, sorry.
Before I get into zero millage, I just want to remind all of you that I'm the same person who stood before you about a year ago and gave a lot of good news, right? We were banning squat trucks. We got that done. Squat trucks are now banned. We got bond reform done. We got fentanyl bills passed. So I want you to remember the good work that was done as I share this update right now. I'm the same person.
And now you know why I said, ooh.
So go easy on me. So let's talk about zero millage. Currently, we have 59 cities and towns that lack an operating millage. If you're one of those cities or towns, just raise your hand. You don't have an operating millage, right? And so you know what it's like to not be able to have a property tax, implement property tax to cover your expenses. So starting last fall, we worked very closely with Senator Mike Gambrill, great senator, as well as the Senate Majority Leader to get a zero millage bill introduced in the Senate. This was major because it previously passed the Senate by 37-3. Remember that number back in 2019. It went over to the House, but we remember what was happening in 2020. It was pre-filed in 2019, taken up by the Senate in 2020. Well, COVID hit. And so by September, when our General Assembly was still coming to Columbia to meet, they just ran out of time and never got it done. So we were able to get Senator Massey, Senator Gambrill to reintroduce zero millage. We were thinking that 37-3 is going to pass very well,
yes,
very quickly.
Absolutely.
Casey started off giving you the lay of the land. We are in an election year. So though we had the bill introduced in the Senate and working with Senator Gambrill, he asked me to find someone to introduce it in the House. We like to have companion bills in both the House and the Senate, that strategy. So God forbid something gets held up in one chamber, we still have an opportunity in the next. So I want to give a shout out to Representative Jay Jordan, who worked with me on this as a favor to us. He shopped zero millage around to the same representatives that took this up and even introduced this bill in 2020. The feedback, he called me into his office about a week later, and I'm typically smiling. And as I enter his office, he said, Erica, I don't know if you're going to be smiling after I finish telling you what I need to tell you. Never start a conversation
right. I don't
that
like
way.
That,
that way. So it is an election year. And right now, members of the House are really trying to avoid a primary challenger. Mm-hmm. And in their eyes, introducing or passing legislation that would appear to raise property taxes on people who have not paid, been paying property taxes is something that they're terrified of. Actually, Jay Jordan's exact words were, people are terrified to touch it. Now, things could change after that April 1st deadline. Mm-hmm. We're not sure. But that's the sense of the House. And he shot this around to a good four senior representatives, including a subcommittee chairman. Scott and I had a separate meeting with the chief of staff for Senate Finance. I shared with him the sentiment from the House, and he looked at me and said, yeah, Erica, next year. The same sentiment is in the Senate. So there's still widespread support, but to avoid a primary challenger, this is politics, y'all, this is where we are. So we'll, if there's a way, if we see a window, we'll take it. But both House and Senate promised me that next year they'll be able to get it done. Okay? So that's where we are. I feel terrible.
It's like, sorry.
It's okay. It's okay.
You did great.
That doesn't awesome. get much. If you want to track that bill, that's Senate Bill 945. Moving on to, now I feel how you felt last year.
Thank you.
So, House Bill 3014, this is known as the Clementa C. Pinckney Hate Crimes Bill. This has passed the House last year and has been sitting on the Senate calendar contested by two upstate senators, one who is not running again, Senator Loftus, and one who may be making a congressional run.
No, he's not. He's gonna run for his seat. Yeah. Yeah, Richard Cash, senator from Anderson.
He was only going to run if Congressman Duncan was going to run.
He said he was going to run for his Senate seat. So
needless to say, it's blocked. Now, what happens, and just to remind you what 3014 does, it's a sentencing enhancement bill. So it allows a prosecutor to seek out an additional five-year sentence or a fine of up to $10,000 when a hate crime has been initiated or conducted. This was important to cities and towns and made one of our advocacy initiatives because many of you in this room are missing out on economic opportunities. We know of a lot of sporting activities that will not come to your city or town because we are one of two states that lacks a hate crimes bill. So right now, and what the pushback we've received, unfortunately, is here at the state, they don't feel that pressure. They just landed Scout Motors last year. They're not seeing what you're experiencing by not being able to bring events and things of that nature into your city or town. So right now, this bill is contested. What that means is it takes one senator to stop a bill in its tracks. We have two senators with their names on the bill. The only way to get around that is for the Senate Majority Leader to put this bill on what we call special order. He has not done so and has no intention of doing so.
He attempted to last week, remember.
Senator
Massey
tried for
medical cannabis.
And then Senator Margie Bright Matthews, one of the sister senators who was unable to be here today, she attempted to get that hate crimes bill on special order and was immediately shot down. So here's what's happening and here's how we're moving. We are aware that a number of you have voted on resolutions in your cities and towns to urge the General Assembly to pass a hate crimes bill. Some of you have gone further in implementing a hate crimes ordinance, a local ordinance that's enforceable. And we understand that your max enforcement is up to 30 days in jail and a $500 fine. We understand that that's nothing like a $10,000 fine, but it's something. And so what we have talked about doing is implementing or standing up some kind of resource for you to see what other cities and towns, I think we're up to 8 or so cities and towns that have such an ordinance. And what we're seeing is local government taking the lead in an area. And this is not the first time that you all have had to lead in this way. But I think what will happen as more of you adopt these ordinances by vote of your council, it's going to get the attention of the General Assembly. Better yet, well not better yet, but God forbid someone is charged according to your ordinance, that will have a ripple effect. And then it will, what we think, will likely force a conversation in the Senate.
just like you did on smoking bans, texting while driving bans, where in the absence of action from the General Assembly, your local leadership is what ultimately forced them to do something. Now, it wasn't exactly what we may have wanted at that point, at that time, but this is another issue, as Eric was explaining, that is ripe for your leadership to show the way for the General Assembly that something needs to take place at a statewide level.
If you pass one of those ordinances, please send it to me. We want to create a resource on our website so others can kind of see what other cities or towns are doing. And I've read a good bit of your ordinances, and they do vary. So I want to make sure that they're on, that all of you have access to what other cities and towns are doing.
Let me say one thing, yeah. Erica, real quick. Even though your penalty is only 30 days or $500, for those of you who have suffered through these mm-hmm. obscene flyers that have been thrown in people's yards, that one count of littering, you could add your enhanced penalty for a hate crime of $500 in 30 days. So if you've got 100 of those things thrown out into a neighborhood, that's 100 counts of littering, that's 100 charges for a hate crime. So it adds up cumulatively if you think about it in that way, and hopefully that would be a deterrent for some of this vulgarity that we're seeing in our communities.
For this next area, and I'll go quickly, but I do want to give a shout out to our legislative committee, Mayor Habib. He brought this to our attention that oftentimes we work on issues that impact city. Yeah, I gave you a shout out, Mayor Habib. That we work on issues that impact how you operate, right? And Mayor Habib and the legislative committee said, I think we should go a step further because there are issues that don't necessarily deal with municipal operations, but they affect our towns. And so we are wading in. We made supporting solutions for mental health one of our advocacy initiatives. The reason why is if there's a call about a mental health disturbance or homelessness or something like that, it's your law enforcement that are being called to the scene. And law enforcement is not necessarily trained to deal with some of the stuff that they're having now to shoulder. And so we're now weighing into making sure local governments are a part of this conversation and that you know what's available to your cities or towns. Your officers are there to keep the peace, not necessarily to respond or place people in housing. It's taking them away from what you've hired them to do. So last session, you were likely aware that the governor signed into law Act 60. What that does, it has essentially split DHEC, the Department of Health and Environmental Control, into two separate entities. There's the environmental piece, and now there is the health and public policy piece. We're tracking that. There is a bill in the Senate introduced by Senator Harvey Peeler, Senate Bill 915, that instructs, kind of outlays what public health needs to look like in our state. This bill lifts up the new Office of Public Health, South Carolina Office of Public Health. It will implement a new secretary of this office who will report to the governor. We don't have many secretaries. We have Secretary Christy Hall. Mm-hmm. I can't think of
transportation.
Mm-hmm. But this will be a secretary position. 915, so I'll back up for a bit. The Department of Administration through Act 60 had to hire a third-party consultant to look at how public health was being handled across our state. Sad to say, this consultant came back and said, we have the most fragmented public health system in the country. So DEOTIS, which is the Department of Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Services, they're working with the patient, but the Department of Mental Health has no clue. Their services are not talking to each other. And so what 915 does is bring some kind of order to our public health offering. Specifically, it does two things. The secretary will have to draft a report, it's called the State Health Plan, on how public health needs to be executed in our state. One of the things that we're following and paying close attention to is it brings DEOTIS, the Department of Mental Health, and the Department of Disabilities and Special Needs into one office. That is great for your organization, for your local governments to know. That report, that plan, has to be constructed according to law by a committee that's going to be put together and assembled. The good news is we are very close with the director of DEOTIS. very close with the Department of Mental Health. We believe, because y'all are the ones, it's particularly law enforcement and your first responders, are dealing with this issue, we believe that local government should have a seat at this committee that's being developed. So what's happening at this committee level will be executed in your cities and towns. And you need to know what's available to you. The last thing I'll say on that is, with our conversations with the Department of Mental Health, they readily took ownership of the fact that they could do better in sharing the services that they provide to your law enforcement officers. So if there is a call about a disturbance, there are folks who in 16 different regional offices that will go with your officers to the scene to help them. And so we're going to do a lot better with communicating what's available, so it's not all falling on your law enforcement officers, your first responders. But we are tracking Senate Bill 915. There's a companion bill that just got a subcommittee hearing this morning.
Yeah, I can't
at
remember
10 o'clock.
I have my schedule.
So we're following both bills. Actually, 915 should be on the floor this week of the Senate. Mm-hmm.
And independent of the legislation that might pass, we are going to bring DMH and other mental health resources to you by way of our annual meeting. We'll be making plans for the annual meeting that we'll have in July so that we can have some exposure of those folks and the things that they do to you and put names with faces and services with the right agencies so that you can reach out if you need to going forward. So keep your eye out for that and more as we continue. Just like with our civility campaign, this is going to be an ongoing effort, not just a one-off kind of effort. So you'll be hearing a lot more about that as we go forward.
And thank you, Chief Ritchie, who schooled me on a lot of things happening with the town of Mount Pleasant in this area. If there's something that I need to know about as we're interacting with this legislation, please loop me in so that I'm representing you well.
Joni, let's talk about the budget.
All right.
That's good. Fun, isn't it?
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
So I like to say when we get up here, we have to tell you the good, the bad, and the ugly. So I'm glad Erica went first. What? She's done the ugly. So the budget. I love to tell you all, it's what, February? If you have not asked your House member or your senator for money for a special project, you are too late probably. If you have not had those conversations, I am so sorry. They start talking about the budget in September, October, November, December. The House is already underway. I have a proviso meeting today. I will say, Casey, I meant to bring this up first. The General Assembly, the House, did something very ominous this year. The chairman of Ways and Means introduced a continuing resolution. And that is scary to me because in my 16 years doing this, they've never started off session, the first day of session, with a continuing resolution.
That was the very first thing that they read across the desk when they opened the House session.
And what does that
year.
Do? What does a continuing resolution do?
Well, the last time they adopted a continuing resolution was in 2020. And so if they are unable to pass a balanced budget in South Carolina, they will operate under the budget that they passed the previous year, only in the recurring dollar. So anything that's non-recurring would not be covered under this continuing resolution.
And by the way, you're not supposed to pass continuing resolutions. You got to pass your budget by whatever the end of your fiscal year is. So don't take a lesson from the General Assembly.
And that is scary for us because that is almost their way of predicting, hey, are we going to get in some kind of fight? Is there going to be another veterinarian school debacle? I don't know. But for them to pass that first was a little scary.
I'll play the optimist here.
What?
They're passing it just in case.
Just in case.
But they expect to pass a budget on time this year. So we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah.
I'm not used to you being optimistic.
Well, I know.
I know that's
I'm
weird.
Usually the
scary.
Cynical pessimist.
That's weird.
So Act 84, which passed in 2019, this is the act that allows the General Assembly to increase or decrease your local government fund based on the general fund. So you have been receiving a pretty good percentage increase over the last couple of years, even with COVID. Last year, you were all received an additional total for the local government fund pot, $13.2 million. So the increase was the full 5%. We are predicting, that's what the subcommittee chair told me, another 5% for this year. So that's great news. The BEA is set to have a new estimate for what the state's dollars are looking like mid-February, so we'll have more information then. We have some proviso meetings this week, and one proviso I do want to talk about is the return to work for PORS and SCRS. So every agency does their request to their subcommittee, and we follow a lot of the subcommittees, and the Constitutional Subcommittee, PIBA, the State Health Plan, presented, and they kept in the proviso. They themselves kept this one in their presentation, the return to work. So right now, if you are a retiree under the state plan or the police officer retirement system, you cannot return to work and make over $10,000 unless this proviso passes again. So what this proviso does, it says, if you are retired and there's a 12-month break in service, you can come back to work for the state or the police officer retirement system and not have that $10,000 cap. It also says that you can be approved based on critical need, but the critical need has to be approved by the Law Enforcement Training Council. I know we've spoken about this to you guys several times, and I always say if I were you in this room, I would not hire someone based on that second part of that proviso, because that Law Enforcement Training Council only meets quarterly. So if you want to hire someone and say you are thinking about hiring them and this proviso passes and you want to hire them in October, well, the council may not meet again to December, and then this proviso is only good for a year, so it's going to go away in June, the end of June. So what is the purpose of hiring someone for, you know, 6 months? I would hire them based on the first part of that. Another good proviso that they are going to delete is the 1% contribution for your retirement. As you all know, they did redid the retirement system in 2017, and based on the numbers, we are looking pretty good, so you do not have to budget for that 1% extra money for the retirement. It looks like we are where we need to be for now, and the numbers are kind of balancing out. And then the ugly, I'm going to talk about
okay.
some. It's still budget, ugly budget. PIBA, how many in this room use the state health plan for your employees?
Ooh.
It's a lot, so you may want to listen up. 2 years ago, there was an 18.1% premium health increase. Last year, you had a 3.8% increase. We have been told that it is going to be 11.8% increase for next year. And keep in mind, PIBA operates on a calendar year, so that premium increase will go into effect January 2025. We do not control that increase. PIBA does not control that increase. The General Assembly does not control that increase. What controls that increase is the amount of payments and claims that PIBA has to pay out. So during COVID, that 18.1% increase was a reflection of all those hospital visits, all the medicine that people were needing. This 11.8% increase, again, you know, there's been another surge in sickness and flu. That is a reflection of that. And the cost of medicine, you know, everything is going up. So we cannot go to the General Assembly and say, hey, can you please lower this? They will politely say to us, as they did 2 years ago, find another insurance company, which you all can do. You can do, and we can talk about that later. But just budget for that 11.8% increase, because it's coming.
Y'all, Joni also, I mean, she watches the budget through every step and advocates, but she's also watching for attempts by the General Assembly to add in provisos at the last minute or one-year law changes. Joni, one of those that you're watching is the short-term rental proviso, correct?
You're correct. And I'll go back to what Casey said. By watching, this is what happens. If a House member wants a proviso and they are not on a subcommittee, they're going to introduce it during the full committee meeting. I can't do anything about that. I can't stand up. I can't stomp my feet loud enough. It is done, because what that member has done, he has gone to the chairman. He has gone to Bannister. He has gotten his blessing, and it is going to happen. And once it passes that full committee, it is now in the House packet to go to the floor. It is near impossible to remove a proviso that passed the House full committee from the House. But what we can do is work the Senate. And that's what we do. So if I don't know about them, then I don't know that I have that opportunity to work the Senate.
But then we also have to fight off proviso attempts in the Senate, as we did to last year on short-term rentals, because we were successful in getting it taken out of the budget when it came out. It was attempted to put back in by one of the sister senators that was here this morning. Right. But we were able to successfully keep it out of the budget last year, and we'll have to do the same effort. So,
While we're talking about short-term rentals, go ahead and talk about short-term rentals. While we're on that topic, let's talk about that.
Short-term rentals. Not all of you regulate short-term rentals. Many of you do. More of you are going to be interested in it as short-term rentals proliferate across the state. If you don't have regulations in your zoning ordinance for short-term rentals right now, you may consider looking at that, because they are going to come to your community. And if you don't think you have one in your city or town right now, you're probably wrong. I would challenge you to go on Airbnb, VRBO, or anybody else and look up your town or city. There's probably there. There are three bills that are in play in the General Assembly right now. Two House bills and one Senate bill that would preempt your authority to regulate short-term rentals in any way whatsoever, from where they can be located in your city to what parking requirements you might have, to capacity limits, any regulation, even a registration of a short-term rental so that you know they're there, would be prohibited by these three bills. Those are House Bill 3253, and House Bill 4573. Those are both authored by Representative Lee Hewitt from Georgetown. The bills are identical, except for the larger numbered bill, 4573, is entitled the Private Property Protection Act.
That's right.
It's the exact same bill otherwise.
He's going to be a hero and protect everything.
Yeah.
It sounds good.
The other bill is Senate Bill 953 by Senator Brian Adams from Goose Creek. And that is one of the topics that that Mayor Habib spoke about. This bill also would preempt entirely your authority to regulate short-term rentals, although they'll both claim that their bills do not do that. I would suggest that they read their bills more carefully than they have. Erica and I had a good meeting with Senator Adams last week about his bill. He said, hey, it's not my intent take away your authority to regulate them. I'm like, well, you should have read your bill. But he expressed to us the two chief complaints that he has that he's looking to try and solve. One of those is allowing a short-term rental that's allowed today to continue going forward if it's sold to a third party or if it's bequeathed to somebody. We can work through that. His other complaint was on, what was it? I can't remember what it was.
The legacy, and then the collection of accommodations.
Oh, yeah,
taxes.
State and local accommodations taxes. There are things that we can do there. He invited us to mark up his bill, which
we did.
We basically struck through most of it and made some suggestions to him, sent that back to him, and we'll see how it goes. You need to be talking to your House member. You need to be talking to your senator and imparting to them how important it is that you be left to figure out how to regulate short-term rentals in conjunction with your residents, your permanent residents, and your councils. You all know best how to deal with these things in your city or town, not some one-size-fits-all attempt from Columbia, because what works in Edisto Beach does not work in Westminster, does not work in Aiken. We all need to have the authority to deal with these things on our own, because each city and town is unique. Your tolerance, your permanent residence tolerance for these things could be different. So a one size fits all. Now, you want to talk about what we saw yesterday?
I do. Really quickly, we've been working very hard to keep the House bills in subcommittee. They've had hearings. They have not moved forward. So we're watching the Senate bill. We were contacted by one of our contract lobbyists who said, just want you to know that Airbnb was in the Senate building whipping up support, went back to look at the bill, and went from just one senator on it to now five who are on it. This weekend, Airbnb sent out a mass email to all of their hosts in the state encouraging them to contact their senators to demand a hearing on Senate Bill
953.
One of our fellow lobbyists who represents the Restaurant and Lodging Associations was able to intercept this email and sent it to us. And so the reason why we need you to be loud is because Airbnb is being very loud.
And here's our problem. There was a law that was passed in 2021 at the request of Representative Hewitt from Georgetown, to his credit, got passed into law. It's current law that requires anybody who collects state accommodations taxes on behalf of a short-term rental to submit to that tax, number one, to the South Carolina Department of Revenue, and the location of that rental where they're submitting that tax. VRBO is complying. Local property managers are complying. Guess who's not complying? Airbnb. Airbnb has some sort of circuit court ruling, federal circuit court ruling from New York, that says that the submission of the address for one of their hosts, not their name, not their social security number, not the name of their firstborn, but just their address, is a violation of their Fourth Amendment rights under the Constitution against illegal search and seizure. Well, that's bunk, okay? So we are not terribly interested in negotiating something, some new law that Airbnb is going to decide, oh, we're not going to follow that one either. So we'd like them to start complying with current law before we get serious about negotiating with them on anything new that they might propose. So ask your legislators, if you talk to them about this, to find out why Airbnb's not complying with current state law.
And Scott, I will say this. Put it in terms that they can understand. I had a two-minute elevator talk with a House member who really did not understand why we oppose this short-term rental piece of legislation. And I put it to him this way. South Carolina is such a diverse state, we don't even have one game zone for hunting. You hunt turkey different in the upstate than you do at the coast. And it clicked with him. He said, you know, we do have four different game zones. I said, we have that for a reason, because we have coast and we have mountains. And then we have the Midlands. I mean, and everything in between. So when you have these conversations, and you know your House members, you know your senators, you know what it's going to take for them to fully understand, other than you saying this should be our authority. So figure that out and have those conversations.
Yep.
We have 14 minutes before lunch, so we're going to
Habib took up 7
right,
of our minutes,
understand
8
that.
Minutes of
we're
our...
We're going to have to hit hard and
okay.
pretty quick some of these things. I'm going to say a name, and then I'm going to point.
Oh, okay.
And then you're going to say something, okay?
What's that movie?
It might not be what you want to hear.
What movie is that from?
Moneyball. Moneyball. Everybody seen Moneyball? Remember when they're
sitting
around? Scott
does that to us in meetings. If he's like, he'll just sit and look at us and point. We're like, does that mean speak right now? Or what do you want us to say? Or whatever.
You're killing time.
Sorry. Impact fees.
Impact fees, development impact fees. I don't know how many of you in this room levy impact fees right now. Most of you probably do not, because of what a pain in the fanny it is to comply with the current law to be able to do it. Senator Tom Davis from the Beaufort area and Representative Chris Wooten have both introduced bills at our behest and at the county association's behest to get rid of some of the administrative hurdles that get in your way of being able to levy impact fees. We've also asked for an extension of the amount of time under the law that you have to spend those, got rid of some of the spending thresholds that are in the current law, and also several other things to make it easier for you if you decide to put them on. If you're not putting on impact fees to help pay for some of the growth that's coming to your communities, if you're experiencing a lot of growth, I would encourage you to look at it, because it sure hadn't slowed down growth in the communities where impact fees are on the books right now. And we've got to be able to get a hold of this growth that we're experiencing right now. And I'm going to talk more about that in just a second.
Joni? Abandoned buildings in 10 seconds.
Got it. Okay, Abandoned Buildings Revitalization Act. This is something that we come to you every year. It is set to sunset in 2025. We have asked for an extension. There's a House Bill 4547 that will extend this tax credit to 2035. Current language also adds that right now there's a $500,000 tax income cap, but this new bill will put a CPI, attach a CPI to it. Don't listen to that. Ignore everything I said, because there's going to be a Senate version that's going to take out that CPI language and change that $500,000 cap to $750,000 cap per project. Is that good?
That was perfect.
Thank you.
Scott, elections.
House Bill 3734 is a bill that passed out of the House of Representatives last year. It's in the Senate right now. It was introduced at the behest of the South Carolina Association of Registrars and Elections Officials, SCARE. And what it does is require all cities and towns across the state to move to an odd year election in either March or November. It does a number of other things to make election administration a little bit better, but it was amended in a Senate subcommittee last week with a very bad amendment that would abolish the 88 municipal election commissions across the state. That has taken us from what was a neutral position on that bill to a position of opposing House Bill 3734. We've explained to the Senate that those of you who have your municipal election commissions like having them. You like having that direct control and a direct hand in your local elections. So we oppose that. If the Senate potentially would amend that, take that amendment out, we might be able to move back to a neutral position. But talk to your House members and your senators about that bill. I will say there's only... there are fewer than 100 of the 271 cities and towns across the state that still have even year elections. Most all of you are in an odd year election, and of those, the vast majority are November of odd years. So look for that to potentially get us a full Senate judiciary hearing sometime soon.
Great. How about liquor liability?
Liquor liability. In 2017, the General Assembly passed a law that requires anybody who serves alcohol after 5 p.m. to carry $1 million of liability coverage per occurrence. That was not such a big deal when there were lots of insurers in the state, and these small businesses, mostly small businesses, had an opportunity to buy those policies at a pretty reasonably priced premium. Insurers have fled South Carolina for a variety of reasons. So that there are very few left in the state. The ones that will write a liquor liability policy are charging exorbitant premiums, which are then making the difference between a business staying open or not. In Woodruff, the little tap room had to close in part because they could no longer afford those premiums. The General Assembly understands the issue, but those of you who are familiar with the terrible tragedy that happened on Folly Beach last summer when the newlywed couple was struck by a drunken driver. They were on their golf cart. The bride was killed. The legislators are having to balance those economic problems with the victims of these things. I don't know that we're going to see any resolution to this problem. The Senate is in studying mode, so I don't have good news for your small businesses, but you need to talk to your legislators, particularly your senators, and let them know that this is dragging your local economy and economic development efforts down, so have those conversations.
Joni, you have to do credit unions in 6 seconds.
Oh, my gosh. Casey, all right. This is actually really important. I'm going to take 8 seconds. Okay. So we do not have a piece of legislation, but there is proposed language. So right now, current law, you cannot, as a local government, take public deposits to a credit union. South Carolina law does not allow for you to do that. What this proposed language would do would allow you to join the other 26 states that allow their local governments to do this. And why is this important? This legislation would be important because it would give you, number one, more choices. Number two, there are some municipalities who do not have a commercial bank, so it would give you an option. And number three, it would spur competition amongst the commercial banks and the credit unions. Right now, we all know credit unions offer higher rates for the money that you put in and lower rates for loans. So this is all around very good news for you guys. We fully support this legislation, but we do have to go against the bankers.
Were you really timing her?
That was excellent. Yeah,
were
I looked
really
at my watch.
Her?
Yeah. Erica, you have...
She's really strict.
You have... I am not going to be the reason
You're
nobody
strict.
Gets to go eat plastic
yeah,
chicken.
Yeah.
All right, you've got a minute for property tax.
All right, we're going to split it. Scott?
Scott gets 30 seconds for annexation. You get 30 seconds for...
You're going to talk about the property tax issue. I'll talk about the legislative fixes that we've been working with legislators on since last year.
A law was passed several years ago that would... the intent was to try and bring in private development money for affordable housing. We heard about that. Laura Ulrich talked about that a little bit a few minutes ago. The public housing authorities wanted to attract private money to help them develop projects for more affordable housing projects in cities and towns and counties across the state. It was working, but then some really smart attorneys figured out a way to, I'll say, exploit that law so that now private developers are getting a 100% property tax abatement if they buy a property, develop a property that has a small involvement from a nonprofit or a housing authority going forward. That was not the intent of the law. And so we are working to try and find some solutions that satisfy both the need for affordable housing, the private money, but also not to be exploited in the way that nobody contemplated when that law was passed in 2020.
So I've been working closely with Senator Michael Johnson since November of last year, working out a solution to this bill on a school bus in Greenville, true story. And he has introduced two bills, but the one that's moving forward is Senate Bill 1017, if you want to jot that down. That makes the property tax exemption proportional to the amount of ownership interest that the nonprofit has in the property. So if a nonprofit entity has a 2% ownership interest, they only get a 2% tax break.
The private developer
does. The private
developer. Yeah, the private owner.
We told the senator, we wanted to see two things in his bill. Number one, recertification. So it was possible. So when these developers certify that they are working with a nonprofit, they do that one time, and then they get 100% property tax exemption from you from in perpetuity. So there's nothing to keep them from going back to market rate. So this bill that Senator Johnson proposes requires the developer to recertify every year. Number two, you weren't notified. So it wasn't until doing their budget that the CFO from Rock Hill said, hey, we're short $800 million. We would have took that state house by storm.
Exactly.
What's happening here? And so we asked that notification go to you all, and that was written in his bill. He gave us some intel about where this is going. It's going to a subcommittee that we worked very closely with to pass the municipal audit bill last year, so we feel really good in working with this subcommittee.
You have 2 seconds to talk about annexation.
I'll take more than that. The perception in the State House and amongst your county council counterparts is that all of the residential growth that we're seeing across the state in your communities is because you are annexing properties into your municipal limits. You heard Laura Ulrich say that our economy is doing great. Our county economic development efforts, our state economic development efforts are doing nothing but trying to attract new industry, new jobs to our state. We don't have, as you saw from her presentation, enough people in our workforce to fill those jobs, the jobs we already have, let alone the new ones, which means people are moving to South Carolina because of the economy, because of the climate, because of the quality of life, you name it. Well, they got to live somewhere. And they're going to live in homes that developers are developing in your communities across the state. There are several anti-annexation bills that have been filed. I'll talk about two. House Bill 4586, the Private Landowner Protection Act. That's different than the Private Property Protection Act. And House Bill 5017. 5017, which we mentioned a minute ago, is the better, this is from Representative Chris Wooten over in Lexington. It would require at a minimum that cities notify the county of your annexations prior to first reading of those annexation ordinances, and then the counties in turn would have to notify you of any subdivisions that it will propose to permit within a mile of your municipal boundaries. There are larger efforts across the state to give counties a veto over your annexations, legal standing to challenge your annexations. And this is a big problem and is going to cause a lot of tension between, has already caused across the state, tension between counties and municipalities. I would beg all of you right now to start communicating to your county council members about what your growth plans are, what your comprehensive plan says that your plans are for growth, how you intend to manage, and then also remind them that private property owners, that undeveloped property owner, also has property rights to sell his or her property if they want to and for it to be developed. We need to have a much better communication effort between ourselves and county councils so that we can resolve some of these potential legal fights that we're going to have, I would expect, in the future before they happen. So annexation is not the cause of growth. It's the great economy that we have here in our state. Annexation is simply a consequence of growth that's already taking place and more is coming. So talk to your residents. Talk to your NIMBYs. Your NIMBYs are a particular problem when it comes to affordable housing and new housing, and remind them that the NIMBYs who live next door to them 15 years ago are not in my backyard. The people who are next door in the subdivision to them were the NIMBYs for them 20 years ago. They need to keep that in mind. So start communicating with your county council members, staffs. You need to be talking to your elected officials. Talk to your counterparts at the county as well. That's all I got to say about that.
Y'all, this was a high-level snapshot of a very small part of what we're working on. Keep your phones open. Don't ignore calls or send us to voicemail if we're calling. We need you. So just keep in touch with us. Keep reading. Keep listening. And we'll keep working.
Thank you so much. I want to thank Greg, Scott, Joni, Erica, and Casey for all your hard work on these initiatives. It's very important that we keep in contact with our legislative team and stay informed on weekly legislative action.